You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Disease du Jour podcast. I'm your host, Carly Sisson, and in this episode, I spoke with Dr. Claire Ryan about antimicrobial stewardship in equine practice. This episode of Disease du Jour is brought to you by Bimeda. Dr. Claire Ryan is an assistant professor with the Department of Infectious Diseases at the University of Georgia College of Veterinary Medicine. A board-certified specialist in large animal internal medicine, she brings a passion for equine health, pharmacodynamics of antibiotics, infectious disease, and clinical teaching to veterinary students and clients. After earning her DVM from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in 2002, she went on to complete a PhD at the University of Florida in 2010. Dr. Ryan is a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine and an active member of several professional organizations, including the American Association of Equine Practitioners and the Georgia Veterinary Medical Association. Thank you, Dr. Ryan, for joining us.
I am delighted to join today.
I'm really excited to talk about this topic with you. I know it's a big one and we can't really get to everything, but hopefully this will be a good introduction. To get us started, why is antimicrobial stewardship so important and how is it relevant to equine practice?
That is an excellent question with some very complicated answers, but primarily, when we talk about antimicrobial stewardship, we are usually looking at it from the lens of trying to prevent antimicrobial resistance, or at least decrease it to the extent that we can. Antimicrobial resistance is everywhere. It's very well documented within the human healthcare realm, and the World Health Organization has some really impressive data that indicates that yearly we are combating deaths to the number of around 1.3 million human deaths associated with antimicrobial resistance, at least as of 2019. And even within the US, we are talking about somewhere just below 3 million deaths, human antimicrobial resistant infections with 35,000 deaths. So very big impact, well documented on the human health field. And there really is a direct link in many cases between some of those resistance mechanisms that are documented in infections in people and some of the resistance mechanisms that we see consistently in bacteria from populations of horses. So we know that things are kind of not happening in an isolated situation, but really there's a lot of crosstalk between populations of bacteria.
So how does antimicrobial resistance occur? Maybe you can give us a brief explanation of, you know, sort of the mechanisms behind this factor.
Yeah, so the antimicrobial resistance occurs when a bacterium gains some genetic material, and that genetic material allows for the production of different compounds that can make that bacteria able to fight against an antibiotic. There's four main ways that this occurs. Those compounds that are newly acquired can either prevent the bacteria from taking the drug up into the cell, which means it may not work. They can also modify whatever the target was for that antibiotic and render it so that the antibiotic is no longer useful. They can actually actively inactivate the antibiotic and make it incapable of affecting the bacteria. And they also sometimes can create a pump on the cell wall that takes up any antibiotic that's gotten into the cell and actively pumps it outside of the cell so it can't exert its actions. And the genetic material that gets newly acquired by a newly resistant bacterium can happen or can come about in a couple different ways. One of the ways is over time, bacteria can have random mutations and genetic material can be altered that way. But much more commonly, what we see, and it happens in very rapid fashion, is that bacteria acquire this genetic genetic material from other organisms. Probably the most common mechanism by which this happens is it's called a plasmid, and it's just a small circular piece of DNA that can get essentially transmitted from one bacteria to the other. So it's kind of like sending all of our bacterial kids to kindergarten, and they are all sharing some of the same things with each other and passing resistance on to each other.
Do we have a sense of where we're at generally with horses? I know we have a little bit more information about human resistance, but how widespread is AMR in equine medicine? And are there any specific drugs that we're seeing resistance to in horses?
This is an excellent question and critically important for equine practitioners. It is perhaps easier to answer the question, are there studies that document a lack of resistance? Because there are very few and far between to find any information where we don't see resistant isolates when we are looking at studies of bacterial isolates in equine patients. So we can find examples of resistance in multiple studies that are exclusively conducted in isolates from equine populations. And we have found that throughout, if we kind of combine all of those together and look at the results across different bacteria, we have documented resistance to essentially all major classes of antibiotics that we use in equine practice. So there are no classes that really have been left out of this picture of antimicrobial resistance. And I think literature is one thing, but as practitioners, we also really, I think most of us have experienced a situation where we have obtained a culture from a patient and ended up looking at our susceptibility results and recognizing that there is drug resistance. And it's one of the most frustrating situations we can come across as a practitioner when we do encounter especially multi-drug resistant organisms in patients who are really sick, and we're trying to get them better by using antibiotics, and we have few to no options available that will be effective against the organism. So I think there's anecdotal evidence that probably each practitioner could sit down and tell war stories about encountering not just single antibiotic resistance, but also multi-drug resistance if you have been around long enough and taken enough cultures.
Are there any specific health issues where this is becoming especially a problem, or is it more widespread and generalized?
Yeah, so there are a number of different conditions where we have over the years been able to document increasing amounts of resistance to antibiotics. So the one that is probably the nearest and dearest to me is the example of Rhodococcus equi. I really love the investigations that we have taken over the past couple of decades and got a lot of information about how the frequency of obtaining resistant isolates has dramatically increased, especially in certain locales, in the Rhodococcus equi isolates that are collected from either sick patients or even the environment. And they really nicely highlight how we, over time, some of our antimicrobial usage practices very likely contributed to rapid development of resistance over a relatively short number of years and decades. So it's a great example, but it's also very common for us to identify, for example, salmonella isolates from horses that have salmonellosis. It's also that are resistant strains, and we also have quite a few neonatal infections or septic joint infections or incisional infections, where we see a lot of antimicrobial resistance, especially in certain locales. And so there are kind of examples that are very frequent and visible to us as practitioners.
Yeah, it's a very concerning issue, especially, you know, over time. I'm sure it's only going to become worse. Today's episode of the Disease Azure podcast is brought to you by Bimeda Equine. Bimeda might be the biggest animal health company you've never heard of until now. Bimeda's products have been trusted by veterinarians and owners since the 1960s, when their Irish roots began. Bimeda is one of the largest producers of dewormers like Equimax, Bimectin, and Exodus. World-renowned equine athletes also rely on Polyglycan, a patented formula that replaces lost or damaged synovial fluid, and Confidence EQ pheromone gel, which reduces and prevents equine stress. Consult your vet and visit bimedaus.com to see where to buy. So I know that there are some principles that are best practice to follow. Can you explain what these are?
Yes, absolutely. So when I think about antimicrobial stewardship and antimicrobial stewardship guidelines that are published, they really, for me, fall under three main categories. The first one is we try our hardest to prevent disease, and in ways that mean that we have to rely on antimicrobials less. Okay, so if I can prevent the disease by appropriately vaccinating populations of horses, by providing them with excellent husbandry and nutrition and supporting immune system function, if I can, you know, make their housing such that they are doing less transmission of potential pathogens to each other. And by that, I mean really practicing good biosecurity, biosafety principles. Those things can all really reduce the incidence of disease. And if we can avoid the disease, great, then we don't have to treat with antibiotics. The second broad goal, which is very closely tied into this, is just generally reducing antimicrobial drug use. But in this category, I see the situation of making sure that we are only using antimicrobials in situations where it truly is indicated, meaning we have evidence that there actually is a bacterial infection. And I know this is common sense for most of us, but it's also very easy to feel some pressure to treat if we think it's probably a viral infection, but maybe we're getting some pressure from the clients or the situation, or there's a show coming up or things like that where we might feel like a little bit of pressure to treat with antimicrobials when it's maybe not a bacterial infection at this point in time. The third key goal of antimicrobial stewardship guidelines generally falls into the idea of appropriately using antimicrobials when we do choose to use them. So some people will talk about the 5 D's of antimicrobial therapy, and this would include using the right drug at the right dose for the right duration, and using the right drug route of administration, and then also de-escalating our therapy, meaning dropping to a different antimicrobial appropriately at the right time, and or stopping our therapy when we feel convinced that they're ready to stop.
What role does culturing play in these principles? Do you recommend culturing anytime an antimicrobial is prescribed, or is that something that would be reserved for specific situations? Because I know that isn't always the most common practice now for prescribing. So I'd love to hear your opinion on that.
Absolutely. So I am a huge champion of, at least, if possible, take the sample. You don't always have to submit it. Okay. If I know that there are realistic reasons why we don't always submit culture samples, but especially for for us in situations where we maybe are seeing cases in ambulatory practice and we know we're not going to get back out there for the next day or two, or even sometimes week, if we have that sample in hand and even just have it appropriately stored in the refrigerator, then at least if our therapy is not working, then we may have the ability to submit that culture. But if we haven't taken it, then we are going to have a really tough time reacting to that. And it's going to slow us down in terms of getting additional information that would be useful for helping us decide what antibiotics would be most effective. So I recognize that there are times where we maybe don't turn it in, or for example, sometimes we have an infection that we absolutely just can't get a good sample of. However, if possible, I really do try my best to take a sample and at the very least hold it if I can.
Do you have any other advice for how veterinarians can start to apply these principles in their prescribing practices?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of steps that as practitioners, we can start to take. And some of them are really very simple and truly just baby steps. I mean, the first and foremost, what you're doing now, which would be to listen to some information, gather some information about what antimicrobial stewardship means and get some ideas for how you can potentially support this ideal of practicing good antimicrobial stewardship. So many practitioners will attend professional meetings yearly or every few years. And lately, there's been a decent amount of attention. And so maybe when you're looking through the little program and you're trying to pick out which talks you're going to go to, maybe just select that as a topic that you are interested in kind of learning a little bit more about. I think once you do learn some of the steps that can be taken, I think that within practices, it's can kind of start as a organic underground movement almost at times where you can start to make little changes. For example, one of our antimicrobial stewardship principles being that we would like to use the right dose of an antibiotic. And we know that equine practitioners don't always guess weights right. Right? There's definitely error in the eyeballing it method. So maybe make sure just commit to having a weight tape with you and actually using it when you're seeing patients out in ambulatory practice. I know it takes a few extra seconds out of your appointment time, but not a bad thing to start employing. I think you can do little things like finding a buddy in your practice who is someone that you are going to be willing to, you know, hold each other accountable to some of the antimicrobial stewardship guidelines and kind of feel like you can bounce ideas back and forth without judging each other's choices, but really, truly non-judgmentally consider, you know, am I using the best antimicrobial, the lowest tier, the lowest class of antimicrobial in terms of medical importance? And am I doing it in a way that really makes sense for supporting these antimicrobial stewardship guidelines and principles? One practice that sometimes is done in the human healthcare field is what they call an antibiotic timeout. And some hospitals will do this where they essentially just create a built-in pause where, you know, the prescribing doctors can look around and say, hey, of the patients that I'm treating right now, am I following these guidelines? And so I think that's a nice little way if you have some built-in reminders to help yourself stay true to the guidelines and principles. So lots of different little things that could be incorporated into clinical practice.
Yeah, and I know it can sound a little bit intimidating to implement everything all at once, but I'm sure that taking little steps is better than doing nothing.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of recognizing that perfection is maybe not on the table today. Maybe I'm not going to meet every guideline and every goal perfectly today, but maybe I'm doing better than I was last week. And, you know, recognizing that every little thing that I'm doing is really to support this mission of making sure that we have a world where 10, 15, 30 years down the road, we still have the option of treating our equine patients with antimicrobials. Antibiotics, new antibiotics, are at this stage very, very infrequently discovered and much less frequently proved for use. So our options are extremely limited. And if we keep going without any efforts to kind of slow down the snowball effect of antibiotic resistance, I do worry about what our future as equine practitioners is going to look like, for sure.
Do you have any resources that you recommend for veterinarians who want to learn more about antimicrobial stewardship and some of the drug classes that they should be more careful about using?
Yes, absolutely. There are some very good resources, and many of them are pretty easy to digest and apply at least portions of. So one of the best places, I think, for gaining an understanding of where our antimicrobial tiers, or, you know, when we're talking about classifications of antimicrobials in terms of their medical importance, the World Health Organization actually has really nice documentation and some excellent charts and graphs that can show you what the classification is for different antimicrobials. Some of them are antimicrobials that we don't use in equine practice, but many of them you will recognize as ones that you prescribe daily. And so it helps you understand where and what classification a lot of those antimicrobials that we're using fall under. For more equine-specific information and, I guess, tools that are accessible for equine practitioners, there are a number of resources that I direct people to. So, for example, BVA, the British Equine Veterinary Association, has a really nice toolkit. It's called Protect Me. It's an antibiotic use toolkit. And it has some worksheets for practitioners that they can use as templates and fill out that are relevant to their practice. And they have some information, just educational information as well there too. One of the things that I really like they have in there is even some signage that you could put up in your hospital that just lets clients know that we are practicing protecting the use of antibiotics. And if we choose not to use an antibiotic, please help support us in this mission of reducing how we're contributing to resistance. So I think those can be incredibly simple yet powerful things that are available in toolkits. There are some great guidelines that have been outlined by a number of different veterinary organizations, including the AAEP has some statements about antimicrobial stewardship. AVMA has some guidelines that are listed on their website. Multiple online resources in Australia and Europe, and Australia right now seems to be having a really strong push for antimicrobial stewardship. So they've got some great tools that are out there, as well as some recent articles that kind of capture and nicely list out antimicrobial stewardship principles.
I will link some of those resources in the show notes, so anyone who's interested in learning more can go there and navigate to some of those links.
Perfect. Thanks.
As we wrap up today, is there anything else that you would like to add on this topic?
Yeah, I would just like to encourage practitioners and let them know that antimicrobial stewardship is complicated and it can be difficult, but there are some really simple steps that you can make towards committing to incorporating some of these practices as you are going about your daily care of patients. And so I just encourage practitioners to not be discouraged if you don't feel perfect at this right away. It truly is a skill that, just like many other skills, we as practitioners need practice and we need to learn more about as the years go on and add new things to our list of doing things the best way possible. And that can be over days, but it can also be gained over years. We're not going to get it right all at once, but we can do better pretty quickly. And then just make sure to celebrate with yourself, with your antimicrobial stewardship buddy that you find out there in practice, and, you know, be able to congratulate yourself when you are able to, for example, successfully communicate with a client why you think it's necessary to hold off on antimicrobial use at this point in time, or to use an antibiotic that may be a little different than the one that they assume you're going to use, and just really celebrate any growth that you can have in your daily practice.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Ryan. That's really good advice and a good overview of this very complex topic. So I really appreciate having you on the podcast.
Well, I really appreciate the invitation and letting me talk about a topic that I am pretty passionate about, and I think is a complicated one. So as a team, as a equine practitioners, not only just in the U.S., but also worldwide, I think we have a good shot at making a big difference.
I'd like to say thank you again to Dr. Ryan for joining us, and thank you to Vimeda for supporting this episode. And as always, thank you to our audience for listening to Disease Du Jour. If you have any questions or suggestions for the podcast, please send me an email at csisson@equinenetwork.com.